When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
Jeff's Guitar Clinic is a multifaceted shop offering guitars, amplifiers, and all accessories, guitar lessons for all ages, and instrument repair of the highest quality. Take the scenic drive to beautiful Fort Atkinson and see what total customer satisfaction is all about. Call Jeff's Guitar Clinic today at 920-723-1733. That's Jeff's Guitar Clinic at 920-723-1733. Jeffsguitar.com.
John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation with us at SlysOffice.com. Brought to you by the United Steelworkers and great local sponsors like S&R Remodeling and our friends at the Axley Law Firm. All right, John, here we go again. This is from the CBC.
A now familiar place, a high-profile man and a woman saying, me too. From Hollywood heavyweights to big-name entertainers, high-profile media personalities, even a former U.S. president. The stories of sexual assault and harassment being leveled against powerful men just keep on coming. The accusation started with producer Harvey Weinstein 6 weeks ago, and they haven't stopped. Look at the running list now. George H.W. Bush, Kevin Spacey, Dustin Hoffman, Richard Dreyfuss, among many others added to that list. And tonight, one more, U.S. Senator and former Saturday Night Live comedian Al Franken. A radio host alleges that Franken forcibly kissed her and on another occasion groped her while she was sleeping. She says the tide of alleged victims coming forward to tell their stories made her feel safe enough to finally tell hers. Here's Paul Hunter.
It happened at one of those stage shows American entertainers put on for U.S. soldiers overseas, this one in Kuwait in 06. On the left, then comedian, now Senator Al Franken. On the right, then model, now broadcaster Leanne Tweeden.
His lips were really wet and it was slimy. And he stuck his tongue down my mouth, and I remember I pushed him off with my hands.
It was backstage, she said, forced and unwanted.
And I said, if you ever do that to me again, I'm not going to be so nice about it the second time.
What's more, this photo she revealed today, taken on the flight home with Tweeden asleep, Franken all smiles.
I was violated. I just felt like, you know, he betrayed my trust.
Franken, thought by some to be a future Democratic presidential candidate, today apologized, calling his actions disgusting and unfunny.
All right, your reaction to this?
I think it was a really rough thing for Franken. And frankly, I think it was something that we probably should have seen coming. Not necessarily with him, but that, you know, as people start to speak up, they're going to, you know, look at members of the Senate. We're obviously looking at a Senate candidate and Roy Moore. I know there's a lot of people who will do, you know, the game of saying, well, somebody else did this or somebody did something worse, and they'll point to President Trump or Clarence Thomas or something like that. But I kind of respect the way Franken has come at this, and he hasn't done that. He's focused in on his own actions and said he was wrong. He's been apologetic. His initial statement was a little bit weak, and then he came back relatively quickly with a stronger, much stronger statement. I think that's appropriate, and I also think taking it to the Ethics Committee is appropriate. It's interesting to have a senator ask to have himself examined, i.e. to have the Ethics Committee look at him, because I think this gets to the heart of the matter. If this was one terrible incident, one set of bad incidents on this trip with this woman, it's bad, and I think it's something that's going to cause an awful lot of people to see Al Franken differently. But that is one thing. If it's a pattern, if there's more to it, that's obviously what I think you would have come out with the Ethics Committee. And at that point, I think it would be the end politically for Franken. But also, it would do something else that's somewhat significant here, and that would be that it would begin to establish some sort of standard, i.e., you know, if there are these accusations, how should a member of the Senate, a member of the House respond? And the last thing I'll say on it is that this comes parallel to an incredible revelation out of the House of the number of payouts that have been made in sexual harassment cases over the last many years. And those were anonymous. I mean, they were, we don't know the details of those cases. And so I think that if we sum this whole last 24 hours up, the one thing that has come, again, with this request to take it to the Ethics Committee, is some sort of sense that this isn't all going to be done behind back doors or behind closed doors anymore. So I think we had a lot happen.
Right. Well, I think the Minneapolis Star Tribune came about as close as they could today for basically saying he's lost his moral authority. And, of course, we know what would follow that. They said he's lost much of his moral authority. They have already kind of had him in a short leash. They didn't like some of the things he did, including evidently a skit that I forgot about regarding rape and Leslie Stahl. I don't even remember that.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So they're already unhappy, and there's evidently a couple cases, one Republican and one Democrat in the state legislature in St. Paul that they've asked to resign because of this. But I think Al Franken's got to answer some pretty serious questions. Did he write a skit where he wrote kissing her into the skit? Did he kiss her in an unwanted way? What exactly happened backstage, and what happened with that picture? There's obviously conflicting accounts right now, but before the Ethics Committee investigates this, doesn't he have to answer those questions?
Sure. I think a press conference is appropriate. I mean,
and not like a Roy Moore press conference.
not like a Roy Moore press conference, or frankly, not even like a Donald Trump press conference.
Right.
Right. I mean, you know, a situation, and I would also suggest, you know, I think Franken, he seems, maybe I'm reading this wrong, and I'm certainly open to that. He seems to be open to that sort of discussion, that sort of response. It gets into a complicated thing, though, because in one area, Franken said at one point, well, I remember it differently. And I can accept that. He may remember it differently. The core of the thing is, no matter what the precise details are, something's happened that, you know, as he says, he's embarrassed by, ashamed by. That's not how you look at a senator. And so here's the political play out on it. It's pretty interesting on a couple of levels. One thing is that until a day or so ago, I think Al Franken was seen by many people as a potential presidential candidate in 2020. Not a certain candidate, but somebody who had made a very good impression on the part of Democrats and liberals during the confirmation process, particularly with this questioning of Jeff Sessions, but others as well. And I mean, he'd really, in the sense of many people, come into his own as a senator, in particularly the last few months. That was raising his stature. That was making him a much more politically viable player for, again, something even as high as the presidency or the vice presidency. I think that what has happened here, It's hard to see that continues, that you know, the play out of this is that he is restored to that political trajectory. So that's a significant development as regards all these controversies. It also opens up another avenue, because then you get to the question of, do people really think this is the only senator that might fall into this?
Well, that's let's just play the audio of the accuser.
He put his hand on my head and came in, and it was so fast and aggressive that obviously I wasn't going to have time to react at all. And he came in and he just sort of mashed, because it was, you know, wasn't finessed at all. And he mashed his mouth against mine and stuck his tongue in my mouth. And it happened so fast, and it was so just, I was so unaware it was going to happen. And I just remember, I mean, in my mind, I was so shocked that it happened, right? When you're not expecting something, right? You're shocked. I remember pushing him off me, and I clenched my hand into a fist. And I remember thinking, if you ever do that to me again, and I was just going to clock him in the face.
Tweeden also shared.
All right. So, that sounds credible to me. You can never know, but that doesn't sound particularly staged. Now, she says she forgives him and she's not asking him to resign. Does that have any relevance in this case?
I think it probably does, some. Look, I thought you came across very strong. But remember, I think in fairness to people, you don't necessarily have to come across strong. Some people are going to be shy. Some people aren't going to be radio hosts, and they may not present as well.
Well, I think Paula Jones did not present as well.
I understand what you're saying. But what I would say is that, it's the key on this is that she raised these issues, and Franken, while maybe debating some minor elements of it, essentially accepted the criticism. He accepted the charge. And so I don't think you have to really, I don't think you have to worry too much beyond that. I mean, that's where you're at. I think an ethics committee inquiry in the Senate goes to different things. It's, of course, it can examine elements of these instances with the photograph and that. But at the next level, it also goes to the question of, is there a lot more going on here? Is this guy, is there a problem that goes beyond what this woman has described? And I think that's the place that you're at now. I thought she actually presented very, very effectively.
Isn't it?
And raised the issue and got a very immediate response.
Senator Gillibrand is now saying, she, of course, is the woman from upstate New York who holds a seat formerly held by Hillary Clinton, has said that, Bill Clinton should have resigned, considering some of the things that he did either with Paula Jones or Monica Lewinsky or Kathleen Willey. And, of course, I watched the interview with Juanita Broderick, and I found her to be quite credible. And I remember talking about that on my show and getting a lot of blowback. And, of course, I do think that unless Al Franken makes a more unequivocal denial of these charges, I think he should resign. I think if what she's saying is true, I think that if the Democrats are going to have any moral authority, I think he should step down. But, I get a lot of blowback when I say that type of thing and people tell me I'm not a good Democrat. I didn't know being a good Democrat was predicated on defending people who mistreat women.
Well, it's also an interesting thing of, people who make these calculations of being a good Democrat or a bad Democrat on something like that, or a good Republican, bad Republican on something like that. I would counsel that if Bill Clinton had stood down back in 1998, in the midst of this, and Al Gore had become president of the United States, that the Democratic Party might be significantly better off today politically. I mean, I know that you can't guarantee that. You don't know that for sure. But I would just suggest that the assumption that standing by your candidate or your president, be it Roy Moore or somebody else, that somehow that redounds well for you politically. No, that's in a moment, right? That's you survive a moment, but it becomes the broader question of is this where you want to be? Is this what you want to be? And my criticisms of Bill Clinton, as extend way deep into
Well, that's what I found. That's what I found most frustrating is I wish some of the people that were so mad about Russ Feingold's vote to keep the trial going. He didn't vote for impeachment, but he voted against short-circuiting the trial. They were angrier at him for that vote on a procedural matter than they were when Bill Clinton helped pass NAFTA. I understood.
I remember it very well.
What really animates people? Let me play. Before we take a break, let me play a clip and get a brief answer from you on Roy Moore.
As you know, the Washington Post has brought some scurrilous, false charges, not charges, allegations, which I have emphatically denied time and time again. They're not only untrue, but they have no evidence to support them. I said I wanted to see unity. I never dreamed that I would succeed even before I got elected, but I have unified the Democrats and the Republicans in fighting against me because they don't want me there.
Has he won the battle when it comes to pushing him aside, but in all likelihood going to lose the war?
Well, this gets very interesting, right? So this is where you see the intersection of all these developments. Now you have a Democratic senator who is in trouble, and you have a Republican candidate who is in trouble. I think that if you look at what's come out so far as regards Roy Moore versus Al Franken, there's a big difference in what's come out. However, for Roy Moore and his people, I think that you end up in a situation now somewhat similar to what Donald Trump did when you had the Access Hollywood tape come out. And then he immediately shifted over to, you know, Bill Clinton's behaviors in the past and Hillary Clinton's response to those behaviors. And I think for a lot of Trump people, that evened things out. Now, for some of the Roy Moore folks, I think they may believe that they have evened things out. The Alabama Republican Party clearly believes this. They are sticking with him. You saw that rally, which was a bizarre rally slash press conference. Again, that's clearly a pushback on his part. But I will also counsel that if you are looking at the polling, because this gets to the heart of your question, if you're looking at the polling out of Alabama, what you're seeing is that Doug Jones, the Democratic candidate, is moving to a position. I think he has to be substantially ahead to have you say, wow, he's leading, because I think there's always
this poll had him up by 8 points. All right, I got to take a break here. So in the end, what do you think is going to happen?
Me? I've always thought that Doug Jones is going to win.
All right, we'll take a break. John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation at SlysOffice.com.
Injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh.
John and I approach personal injury cases in the same way. We want to be certain that our clients are treated fairly, that our clients are comfortable, that our clients know they can trust us to get the best result for them.
It's our professional responsibility to make certain you are fairly and fully compensated. Most of our cases are settled without a trial.
Call injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh at 257-5661 for the personal attention you deserve.
I want to thank all the labor unions here in Dane County that help keep SlysOffice.com up and going so you keep up to date. Whether it be the Madison Firefighters, Local 311, or the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, or our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated. These are some of the most active local unions who organize, and constantly stand up for workers. Thank you from SlysOffice.com.
Before we talk about the tax bill and what's going on with some of the other Trump stuff, I want to play an incident with one of the most unctuous, irritating people of the United States Senate. This is Orrin Hatch.
Can I guess? Oh, no, I was going to guess Orrin Hatch.
Yeah. Here he is doing battle with our hero, Senator Sherrod Brown of Ohio.
I've been here working my whole stinking career for people who don't have a chance. And I really resent anybody saying that I'm just doing this for the rich. Give me a break. I think you guys overplay that all the time, and it gets old. And frankly, you ought to quit it.
Mr. Chairman, the public believes
it. I'm not through.
Okay.
I get kind of sick and tired of it. Not true, it's a nice political play.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
it's not true.
With all due respect, I get sick and tired of the richest people.
Regular order, Mr. Chairman.
Getting richer and
regular
richer.
Order.
Rich.
Order.
Regular
order.
Middle, we do a tax.
Regular order.
Middle class.
Wait a minute. Regular order.
And over and over again.
Wait just
how many
a second.
Times do we do this before we learn this?
Listen, I've honored you by allowing you to spout off here. And what you said was not right. That's all I'm saying. I come from the lower middle class originally. We didn't have anything. So don't spew that stuff on me. I get a little tired of that crap. And let me just say something. If we worked together, we could pull this country out of every mess it's in. And we could do a lot of the things that you're talking about, too.
I think Sherrod Brown should use that for a TV commercial.
I kind of think so, and I think that, you know, but I would say that Orrin Hatch said something that I agree with, okay? And I want to stand up for him on this. He referred to his tenure in the Senate as my entire stinking career.
Right.
And I have nothing to add to that.
Right.
I think that sums it up. And the other thing is, can you imagine that line? I've allowed you to spout off here. One senator in the United States Senate saying that to another senator. Isn't the point of the Senate that you get that people get to spout off? I mean, you know, if you're not allowed to speak up and make relevant, interesting, significant, timely statements, which is what Sherrod Brown was doing.
Not that it means anything in the Senate, but Sherrod Brown represents three or four times as many people as Orrin Hatch.
Well, it should mean something in any place, but there's something else, too. You know, Sherrod Brown it's not exactly like he's advocating for some far-out idea. You know, it's like, you guys keep, you know, spouting this stuff or keep trying that line. I mean, have you looked at any poll? There are polls that say, yeah, we really think that Orrin Hatch and the Republican leadership in the United States Senate are watching out for the little guy. I mean, Orrin Hatch is the only person, I think maybe in the world, who believes that he's spent his entire career trying to help people that can't get a break otherwise.
Well, it is interesting that, you know, if he was lower class at one time, he's not lower class anymore. He's one of many senators that mysteriously have gotten rather wealthy during their stinking careers.
Can I say something else about Orrin Hatch, too, which is
irritating.
Yeah, here's the roughest thing you can say about him. He really was once better, and that's an interesting thing. Orrin Hatch did come out of a working-class background, whatever his lower middle class, and we didn't have anything line is. He was a working-class guy, and he drove a truck. I think at one time he may even have been a Teamster. I remember in 1999 when the Republican presidential race was coming out, and they were having Ben out in Iowa where all the candidates spoke. And Orrin Hatch actually came there and spoke at a tent set up by the Teamsters and talked about the need for the Republican Party to be more in touch with working people and, you know, more concerned about, you know, union members, working class people, stuff like that. It didn't work politically. That didn't make him the Republican nominee in 2000, as you may recall. And it's very significant that as the Senate and as the Republican Party has moved toward a Senate Republicans and the Republican Party moved toward a much, much more conservative position as regards economics and economic fairness, Hatch has moved with them. And so it's a very important thing to understand that the Orrin Hatch of 20 years ago or, you know, 18 years ago might not have yelled at Sherrod Brown. Might even have understood some of the things Sherrod Brown was trying to say.
Where do you think this tax fight is going?
It is going to, I think, I could be wrong, but I think roughly the same place that the healthcare fights have gone. In fact, healthcare has now been woven into some elements of it. This is a uniquely unpopular piece of legislation. Tax cuts for the rich. Very little tax cuts for working people, particularly in a lot of states, a restructuring of how taxes work so that people's taxes, you know, in like New York, I would say Wisconsin, don't you think that Wisconsin's taxes are going to go way up, right? Because you can't deduct your...
Yeah,
your
I think there's a threshold on the house, deduction on that, but it's kind of confusing at this point. Yeah.
No, but you're right. And Wisconsin may come out better than some very wealthy areas of New York or California. But, I mean, this is not an appealing bill. It's also a Potemkin village. It's a false construct. Within this bill...
I love the Catherine the Great reference.
There you go. Yeah. But within this bill, you've got hidden away, you know, basically the destruction of the Affordable Care Act, right? You also have a massive assault on Medicare and Medicaid. Potentially devastating there, and stunning deficit projections, right? The prospect of massive sort of scorching deficits. So you actually have a piece of legislation that is practically bad, i.e. it makes a lot of people's circumstances worse. It is fiscally bad. It potentially increases the deficit. And it assaults the Affordable Care Act, which is increasingly popular, and Medicare and Medicaid, which are actually very popular. And so my answer to your question is, I think there's a pretty good chance that in the United States Senate, you get to 51 no's. Or depending on where Roy Moore is on that day.
All right, let me play a clip from Robert Menendez, who essentially ended up being acquitted with a hung jury. And looking,
but looking at the
way the jury voted, they're probably not likely to retry this case. Here is Menendez.
I want to thank my colleague, Senator Cory Booker, who has been supportive from day one, traveled the state and spread the good word, was here on the first day of trial, and came and testified and was, in my mind, a profile in courage. I also want to thank Senator Lindsey Graham, my friend and colleague, for once again crossing the aisle and coming to testify as to my character, my truthfulness, and my honesty. And while I know he came as a friend, I appreciate the political capital he used as a Republican to come and testify on behalf of a Democratic colleague. To those who were digging my political grave so that they could jump into my seat, I know who you are, and I won't forget you.
Ooh, ooh. Well, you say that in New Jersey. That has a little extra sting to it.
All I can say is... kind of a statesman until the last line, wasn't he? Very well constructed. I want to thank Cory Booker for coming in, relatively progressive Democrat. I want to thank Lindsey Graham, Republican senator. Know the political capital that he expended to, you know, obviously Menendez is suggesting tell the truth that Menendez is a good guy. And then Menendez closes off with a line that suggests maybe he's not quite the statesman that Booker and Graham were, or you know, you might want to see him as. And you know, I think this gets to the heart of the matter. I think Menendez had a real problem there. There were very, very serious issues. I think he mounted a defense that made it kind of more about him as a senator, or him as an individual also, rather than the charges that were in play. I don't know if the feds charged exactly right on this, and I think there are also some questions about how they pursued the trial. But I would venture to say I think Menendez is a pretty lucky guy. He ended up getting a break here, and I think that he will probably not face a new trial. By the same token, this trial was huge news in New Jersey. I was out there. I saw it because I was covering the gubernatorial race. And this did not look good for Menendez. You know, I mean, that some of the stuff about his colleagues testifying sounds great. But an awful lot of what was discussed there looked pretty shaky.
Is it time for the Senate Democrats to cut him loose as far as running for reelection?
That is very... Look, I think it would be... time, it'd be a good time for him to stand down. You know, he's come through this and it would be, doesn't sound like he's going to. And I would doubt very, very much that the Senate Democrats would do that. I do think, though, this is a big deal. And we're talking about all these issues that call senators into question and call members of Congress into question. The fact of the matter is that our House and our Senate largely are made up of people who are living incredibly different lives by incredibly different rules from the rest of us. And one party, I think, may eventually decide that it wants to be the party that runs against that, the party that runs against political corruption, campaign corruption, the just kind of collapsing of ethics. Trump got pretty far in 2016 suggesting that he would do that. It's the old argument that only a millionaire or a billionaire can come in and say no to all the money and power.
Yeah, he's doing a fine job.
Well, he was a liar.
He was, he was, is, and always will be a liar. John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation. Thanks for coming to SliesOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers.
SliesOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
Making stuff matters, because when we make things in America, America makes it. American workers and families make it. Our communities make it. Consider this. For every one manufacturing job in our communities, five more jobs are supported. Manufacturing jobs pay an average of 10 to 50% more than service sector jobs. That allows working families to support their local businesses, schools, emergency services, and more. Creating 2.5 million new manufacturing jobs would mean at least $100 billion for our economy over the next decade. Domestic manufacturing is the green economy. It's among the cleanest, most efficient, and productive in the world. That's why the United Steelworkers and our more than 1 million members and retirees are fighting so hard to protect and grow manufacturing. Because making stuff really does matter. Join our fight. Visit usw.org and like us at facebook.com/steelworkers. Support American manufacturing. Buy American. Buy Union.